This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we're going to begin with an update from the Professional Horsemen's Council, and we'll also be talking to Patience O'Neill in our Under 25 series. But first, Tammy Smith joins us now. She is chair of the Professional Horsemen's Council and, of course, was very involved with the affairs of the council when they met during convention last year. Tammy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Well, there's a lot on your plate as chair of that council, of course. Just give an overview, if you would, for the wider membership, Tammy, of what the role is of the council and its relationship within the USEA.
Well, I believe Jonathan Holling was one of the first people to kind of get this thing started. There was a group of professionals that wanted to really have a voice within the USEA and be able to have people communicate with the professionals through this committee as well, so that we could actually give back to the sport and when we had concerns or wanted to push through rules or rule suggestions, we had a way to do that. And it was for so many years, the professionals didn't have a voice. So the Professional Horsemen's Council was implemented, and I might be wrong on the original founder of it all, but I do know that John Holling had a huge part of getting all that going. And now we just, you know, we continue to try to make improvements and communicate with other professionals in, you know, what their concerns are and what we as the top professionals of the sport need to do to give back to U.S. eventing and not let it become such a us as them and them type of situation. So it can be quite tasking at times.
Well, the climate has changed so much, hasn't it, with the sport? You know, it's become much more sophisticated. The stakes are higher, and that's an important aspect of how the riders are represented, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you never used to have syndicated owners and, you know, the prices of horses. And, I mean, every time we take one of our horses out on the cross-country course, it's a risk, you know, and it's a known risk, but we want to be able to put our horses out on the cross country course where we know that, you know, the footing is as the best that it can be and that we're, you know, being provided, you know, a decent and safe venue to be able to compete those top horses at. And not that any horse isn't able to have the same amenities, but when you have a group of people who've invested a tremendous amount of money in buying a horse in hopes that you make a team, you take it a little bit to another level than you would if you bought your own horse for, you know, a more reasonable price. And so I think that has changed significantly in eventing since I know I was growing up. I don't even remember even talking about footing on cross country. You just went out there and did it, you know, that. And then, you know, what we can do to help, like we're in the process of putting a rule through to allow, technical delegates, to be able to compete or to be able to officiate at competitions that their family members are competing at. Before, it used to be that the technical delegates were not allowed to officiate at those venues. And so the PHC has put forward a rule change that we can allow and mirror the FEI in allowing technical delegates to be able to officiate at national horse trials so that their you know, relatives can still compete, and that didn't used to be the case.
And what other topics are out there front and center right now that you as chair are looking into? And do you have any sub-working groups that you're addressing any particular topics with, Tammy?
We don't have any sub-working groups. We're kind of a small group. We meet quarterly and sometimes more often, depending on what's going on with with the United States Eventing Association and the works. We have eyes and ears pretty much at every event, and so we're trying. If I get an email saying, "Hey, I have a concern," then I'll draw a conference call for the committee to meet to discuss that specific issue. But I would say that the biggest thing that's happening and what we talked about at the town hall meeting in DC was that the professionals really want our sport to remain what it has always been, and that old school feel of having, you know, the person next door help you out when you, you know, can't get your set in your horse's foot, or that it's not an us against them type situation. And the eventing, that's what's so beautiful about our sport, I think, is that we've really been able to keep it wholesome and friendly. And even though the stakes are higher, and we do, as a, you know, as professionals that want to ride on teams, we do want, you know, better footing, and we do want things, you know, to be improved on so that our horses have less risk in getting injured. But we also, we're exactly like the old fashioned amateur who still exists, not very many, but that still does exist. It's still the person who has their horse in their backyard who someday aspires to go to the Olympics, and they kind of half think that they never have the possibility, but who knows, that they just might, and wants to go around Kentucky, or maybe they don't. But I think that it needs to be very, very important that we stick to our roots, and that we want everything that, you know, we as the top professionals, as any professional, as even middle professionals, we all want the same thing, and that's to keep eventing what it's really come from, and the grassroots of that wholesome, you know, hardworking blue collar group of people.
And of course, you know, you, as you say, there are different levels of riders. That, although you may be professional, there are those that are more ambitious than others, and right, and have more horses. So, but the bottom line is that, you know, you all have the same requirements. And so, talk a little bit about access to membership and what that involves. What you need to do to become a member of the PHC?
Actually, anybody can come to any of our public meetings, which are at the convention every year. We have a few meetings each, a meeting every day. I think there's 2 to 3 meetings that are held. You, as somebody who's, it's an open forum type meeting, and they're all welcome to voice any concerns they have. The actual working group that is involved with the committee is 6 to 8 people. It just depends on who's able to commit to doing their job of doing that. And so right now we have 6 people who meet usually about 5 to 7 times a year, and not meet physically, but on a conference call. And we talk about, you know, filling out our event evaluation forms, which our professionals typically have a really hard time doing. Mm-hmm. And not only just filling out the event evaluation forms for talking about what's wrong with the competition, but actually talking about what's right with the competition as well. And, you know, those kind of high stress type topics that kind of people, you know, there was one person that said to me recently, well, why can't the professionals come to cross country and donate or volunteer for an hour out on and jump judge? And although in a perfect world, it sounds like what an amazing opportunity that would be for, you know, the competitors that are all there and the volunteers that are already there that could maybe go and listen to Philip Dutton stand by a jump and jump judge and talk about how each person rode that jump. They are professional riders, and they're riding you know, between 6 and 12 horses at a competition. And so it's not always very, those great ideas, although they're great, aren't always, realistic. And I said, you know, instead of maybe doing something like Philip Dutton or myself or, you know, anybody who's riding multiple horses at a competition, and teaching multiple people at competitions, instead of that happening, why don't organizers sit down with their local trainers within their area and talk about what we can do to give back to help that competition raise money to have money for the improvements that we're requesting. For instance, this weekend, pretty much every West Coast trainer around the area donates their time to teach cross country and show jump at Galway Downs for the weekend. And we all show up and people just randomly sign up. They pay Galway Downs for the event. The trainers donate their time all Saturday and Sunday, and that money goes back into Galway Downs and improving the footing, improving jump course building, improving, you know, whatever else he feels, you know, prize money, stuff like that. And so, and prize money, not just for the upper levels, but throughout all the way down, the prizes and the prize money all the way down through the levels. And so that was my suggestion, that possibly the organizers within the area could sit down with the riders and trainers, no matter what level of professional they are in the area, and come up with a plan to raise funds for that specific competition. I know Plantation Field was one that was not, in the riders' opinions, for many years wasn't up to snuff. They wanted it to be better, and they, I believe Katie Walker and Dennis Glockham and Philip Dutton and Boyd and all those people just kind of sat down and said, what are we going to do to make it better? And the improvements have been tremendous at that place. And so, you know, I walked around, it was my first time there this season in the fall, and I walked around and there was a jump sponsored by Philip Dutton and one sponsored by pretty much every trainer that was out there, or competition farm, which was, you know, that's a great way to raise money to, you know, have, and there was signs there, you know, generously donated by Philip Dutton. Now, I don't know how much money it costs to donate to sponsor a fence, but, you know, you see that there's ways to be able to, do those kinds of things to help people, you know, raise money for their venues to help make the improvements so that they're not just doing it all on their own and out of their own pocket.
Well, that's a wonderful way to partner with the sport and to be seen to be, you know, on the same team, as it were, and giving back to the sport as well, setting the example for the future. That's an right. awesome way to do it, Tammy. Well, I'm sure there's lots on your plate then as chair of the PHC, and you'll be circling back around, of course, later this year when you meet at the next convention.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, good luck with it all. Thanks for giving us an update. And I think anybody who's interested in the work of the PHC can find more information on the USEA website. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Tammy. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Chris.
And now, continuing our series of the USEF Under 25 Riders on the Training List, we hear from Patience O'Neill. Hi, Patience. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I know that we've spoken before a few years ago, but you're now how old? You're about 14, 15 now?
I just turned 16 months ago.
Oh, 16 already. And tell us a little bit about where you're at school and how much time you have for riding. Are you able to train every day?
Yeah, almost every day. I do have volleyball 2 or 3 times a week. But I do go out to the barn every day after school. I'm going to Mount Si High School right now here in Snoqualmie, Washington.
So what about the routine then for you? How much riding can you do a week?
Almost every day I'll ride either 2 or 3 horses, 2 of my own and then 1 client horse. And pretty much every day I go out to the barn for at least 2 to 3 hours.
Right.
And on the weekends I'm there all day.
Right. So tell us about the horse that's been named to the list and your partnership.
Hugh Mungus. he's a Welsh Cobb thoroughbred, and he's actually like almost 19 hands. He's 18.3 or something. Our stick doesn't actually go high enough to measure him, so we're kind of guesstimating on about 18.3, 19 hands. And we got him about 7-8 months ago at the beginning of the year, so about maybe 9 months ago now. And I started him off at training because he had already done some novices, and the jumps are so small for him. And he's always been super good and willing in dressage, and he loves cross country, which is great. I moved him up to prelim at the end of the year. He was super good about it. So I ended with the year with 2 prelims under our belt in the theater this coming season. We're hopefully going to do just the whole year at prelim, just get a solid year at prelim, maybe do a 1-star by the end of the year. But mainly just prelim.
Now, I would imagine he has a pretty good temperament, doesn't he, with that Welsh cross in him?
Yeah, he's super, super good in the barn. Everyone loves him. He doesn't really spook at anything. He's super brave. He's a super good-going horse, strong-willed.
So tell us about his strengths and weaknesses, what you'll need to be working on whilst you're on the training list.
I think what we'll work on the most is probably just our dressage, just getting all the movements down for dressage, because he is still so young and he doesn't know as much as some of the other horses. At least he knows the simple ones like leg yield and all that, but I think in time to move him up to intermediate, we're going to have to learn all the other lateral movements. And I think some of his strengths, he definitely loves cross country and he definitely wants to go, I think. But on cross country, he still needs to learn to gallop and use himself a little bit more, because he is so big that he struggles using himself and going fast sometimes.
Right. And what's he like with his flat work then? I mean, does he have a good temperament for that? What sort of strengths and weaknesses does he have in that department at home and in competition?
He loves dressage, I think. He enjoys dressage. He enjoys learning and pleasing people. And I think he really likes to just go around and look pretty for everyone. He's a beautiful mover. He's a great canter. He's super smooth to be on. And he's super supple in his neck, which is great for such a big horse. And he's super balanced. And, I mean, I don't know if he has any weaknesses in dressage, but he definitely loves it.
Who do you train with?
I train with Karen O'Neill, my mom.
Right, so that's convenient, having that coach available at home. So tell us about the upcoming season then, Patience, and what you're planning.
For eventing, for Hugh himself?
Yes.
Well, we'll start the year off with prelim, and then mainly just stay at prelim. We'll hopefully either do a 1-star at Rebecca, or at the end of the year, we'll go down to California and do a 1-star either at Galloway or Twin Rivers.
So in terms of, you know, his where he is now with his training, and when you come out, when will be your first competitions then of the season?
So our first competition of the season, it really depends, because in the Northwest, since we do have so much rain and the winters and springs are so long, our first competition is usually the very end of May, usually the beginning of June. That's when they all start. So unless we go down to California, it'll be the end of May, our first competition.
And what do you feel as a rider that you need most out of being on this training list, and the benefits of this extra training, Patience?
I just want to be able to get to ride more horses and be able to be a more universal rider, and not just be pigeonholed to my 2 horses that I have, but be able to ride any horse that someone might give me in the future.
And long-term goals, do you have any ambitions there that you're mapping out?
Hopefully for Hugh, maybe for my other horse, Hollywood Diva, but definitely for Hugh, I want to go to Rolex hopefully by either 2019 or 2020, and then maybe hopefully the Olympics by 2020 or 2024.
Fabulous. Well, we'll keep an eye on that plan, that campaign over the next few years, patients. So thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and telling us about your partnership, and of course looking forward to what you'll get out of the winter training list this year. So all the very best of luck to you with your partner and the season ahead.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for this week's program. On the show next week, we'll be hearing from Lou Leslie and Tick Maynard. So until then, don't forget to check out all the latest news via our website at useventing.com and follow us on our social media channels. Thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.